Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
All right, this podcast is part of the More Than Baseball family. Check them out at morethanbaseball.org. They are working hard to assist minor leaguers during and after their career with career advice, financial, education, and even mental health services, and so much more. Check them out at morethanbaseball.com. Super hyped for my guest today, pitcher in the Mets organization, grinded in indie ball before the Mets gave him a chance. Now he's been as high as AAA. David Griffin, how's it going, brother?
Good. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. And like I said, right before we hopped on, I do want to thank you for jumping on here. I know it's been a couple busy couple days for you. You were in AAA and then AA.
Yeah.
So like, how does that all work out? Like, I mean, are they just, last minute, like, hey, by the way, we're actually going to send you down to AA, or like, what is that process kind of like usually?
Yeah. So what happened was, I mean, I was told like late the night before that they were like, oh, hey, you're starting tomorrow, but it's up in AAA. I mean, going into it, I knew I was going to be going for at least a spot start.
Sure.
And I was fortunate enough to get two starts when I was up there. I mean, by any means, I didn't think I was throwing well enough to deserve a promotion at that time. But yeah, I was up there for two starts. I mean, definitely a learning experience. Learned a lot when I was up there from the coaching staff, the players and all that stuff. And just the gameplay itself. And then after like, I think it was a Sunday, they're like, hey, just wanted to give you like a heads up, like you're going back down to AA, but you're gonna be starting on Wednesday or whatever. So, I mean, but they're like, hey, by any means, don't get discouraged by it. I mean, the day I would have thrown just happens to be a day of DeGrom's rehab for AAA. So it's like, I mean, I know there's still a lot to learn about the game and stuff like that. So it's like, I know I still need to work on stuff. So, I mean, obviously, the traveling back and forth it's never entertaining and it's never fun, but yeah. It is what it is. It's part of the business.
No, for sure. You mentioned Scherzer. Like, was he, like, did you guys cross paths in the last couple of days?
Scherzer was, he rehabbed in Binghamton twice with us in 2 weeks. So he was there the first night the first weekend. After his first start, he came back, came to the locker room the next day, and there was AirPods there. He happened to leave us all AirPod Pros, which is a really generous thing for him to do. He didn't have to do it. I mean, obviously, we're really thankful for it. So I'm using these now, so thank you, Max, for those.
Shout out, Max.
And then the next time around, he bought us a really nice dinner in Hartford. We had it catered in the locker room and everything like that, and it was some of the best food I've had all year, if not entire of my baseball career.
Yeah.
Like, it was very good food, and you know, he took care of us for sure. I mean, he looked out for us and stuff like that. Like, yeah, he was still there to do his business in Mad Max mode, but he still looked after us before, like when we got there early enough and stuff like that.
Yeah. So a couple of things, like this is kind of fascinating, because you hear all the time, like rehabbing players will come in, then they'll either get dinner or they'll do something to take care of the minor leaguers that, you know, that they're with and whatnot. So just to have him, you know, bring out the AirPods for all you guys in the locker room, like that's just, that's electric. Just him being, you know, such, cause you know, you're talking about Mad Max, but like as a person, like he's just an amazing guy. Like, have you, like, were you able to, like, you know, maybe watch some of his outings and just kind of take notes and just prepare? Cause like, he's literally one of the best to do it.
Oh yeah. I mean, we got to watch his whole bullpen routine, stuff like that. How it goes about like warming up before a game. I mean, one of the things was just like, hey, obviously, like, when you know a guy starting on their day, like, obviously don't talk to them unless they speak to you in general. But no, it was unbelievable. You see Max, like, when he first got there, like, for the start, like, he was a nice, he was easygoing guy. And then, like, once those headphones went on, we knew it was like, hey, it's game time. And just the flip of a switch like that, the headphones afterwards, I mean, he was ready to dominate. It didn't matter that it was a double A rehab start or game seven of the World Series. He was ready to compete. And no, I mean, during the game too, like, he would talk to the catcher and sometimes the other starting pitchers that threw earlier in the series, like, hey, what do you got in this guy? What do you see for this? And just like the conversations about the game itself too, like saying like, hey, this, we know this guy chases this, he's been doing this. If this guy is like, if his front foot's open more, he's trying to turn and pull the ball. So it was really cool to see like how like in-game adjustments he can make and what was he looking for in a hitter and stuff like that. So it was really cool to like see him go about his business, not only once, but twice. So that was a really fascinating thing to see as well.
That's incredible. And have you had any other like major leaguers rehab there since you've been or no?
Yeah. So the first one was actually Tyler McGill. He rehabbed with us. I want to say the first week of June. And that was a really cool experience as well. That was my first real dose of a full-time major leaguer making a rehab start. So that was really cool to see and just see how he goes about his business too. And yeah, at the end of the day, they're still dudes. Like, they're still guys as well. Like, just getting ready to play a baseball game. So it's just some guys do it so differently. And some guys, it's funny, like, everybody has their own routine, stuff like that. So it's really cool to see. And, like, obviously, too, you get to, like, soak up all the knowledge. And, like, yeah, like try to see if it works for you. If it doesn't, like, now you know. Mm-hmm. It's all about finding what's the best for you.
Yeah, no, for sure. And this was your first spring training, like, right? Like, your first official spring training this season. Yeah. Like, how was it? Like, again, like, you saw Max here, but just being able to see all the big leaguers, I'm sure you've had interactions, bullpens and whatnot.
A little bit. I mean, obviously, you had the lockout at the beginning of the season. So, the beginning of spring training. So, that was kind of tough to, like, obviously, like, you didn't get to really see any of the major leaguers. And then there was a few times where, like, major league hitters came down. If, like, they weren't traveling for the spring training game, they would actually come in and, like, hit during our – and take all the at-bats during our scrimmage.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm just going to charge my phone. So But, yeah, no, I mean, it was so cool because, when Cano, when he was with the Mets, he came down, McNeil, Nimmo, Marte, Escobar, like, they were all rotating back and forth through different the fields and just getting their at-bats in and just hearing their conversations, how, like, oh, this pitcher tips this by doing this, and, like, they've never seen us throw before, but the fact they're able to pick that up right away just shows how knowledgeable they are within the game. Like, they're looking for – they're not talking about, like, what to do after the game. They're talking about, like, what they see in that exact moment to help them get ready for the next time they get up.
Yeah, that's incredible. I want to talk to you about this. So right off the bat, your team, the Rumble Ponies, right? Is that double A or low A or high A?
Double A.
Double A. So they got in a brawl with the Sea Dogs, and it was a pretty it was a legit brawl. Like, typically you'll see like benches clearing, they kind of walk out and then they kind of jog back. Yeah. But this was like, there were punches thrown. I saw one guy throw off his jacket. Like, he was about to dive in there. Like, were you there during this experience or no?
No. So I was, because of that, I did get called up because obviously, like, unfortunately, one of our pitchers got hurt. He ended up tearing his ACL and I forget what else, he did surgery, but really nice guy, a very, very tough moment. I mean, that's just the heat of competition. Like, from what I've heard from other people that were there, they were saying, like, the pitcher was yelling at the umpire. The hitter thought he was yelling something to the pitcher. So then the pitcher sent him back to the hitter, and just mayhem just went crazy. So, no, I wasn't there for it either. Like, I saw it on my social media, and I was like, oh, boy, this is not good. But, yeah, it's never good. Like, I don't think anyone's really trying to intentionally hurt anyone. If they are, then what are they doing here? Like, it's just, there's no place for that.
I'm going to be honest though. I'm actually very pro like fights, especially in the minor leagues. I feel like that's so entertaining. As long as I'm not trying to, I don't want to see anyone get hurt. Right. But I feel like that's, the place was buzzing. Like, you could just hear the fans in the background and whatnot. Obviously.
Cause they're not expecting to fight like at all. Like, anytime the bench is clear, everyone's like, "Ooh, like what's going on?" Because they expect baseball to be very boring to like the average human. But like baseball fans that like look for like the little stuff, like the nonverbal cues of like the like communication stuff like that. Like, hey, what's going on here? Like the anticipation. That's what makes the game so great, because you never know what's going to happen. But no, I mean, obviously we like diving plays, hard slides and stuff like that, but there's no need to be drilling guys in the head. There's no need to be hitting guys in the elbow just because of something that happened earlier. Like that's, I mean, I understand stuff like that. Like I would say like, that's when everyone's like, oh, old school, like run out the home run, don't pimp in, stuff like that. But at the same time, you gotta be emotional. You gotta be expressive. Like you, if you enjoy playing the game, like you love playing the game. Said about a guy like showboating you, then make a better pitch. Like that's just kind of how it goes. Like, because I can tell you what, if I'm in a bases loaded jam with a shutout going and I end up punching out the four hole hitter, like I'm gonna be a little bit fired up. Like it's not a disrespect thing to the hitter. It's more of like yes, I got the job done. I'm fired up. Like, because at the end of the day, you want to win.
For sure. And that's what I was gonna ask you, just because like there's some people who have that mentality of like, you know, don't pimp home runs, blah blah blah. Madison Bumgarner is probably like one of the classic examples of just getting so mad when things like that happen. So I was going to ask you, like, what is your thoughts when someone does that? Like, has anyone ever, you know, just hit a bomb off you, then pimped it, and then like you're just standing there like,
flashback to my last outing in AAA. It was funny. I threw a pitch, and it was just one of those things where I threw the pitch, and the moment my foot landed, something didn't feel right, and like I literally went like. I said some explosives that I don't know if I can say on this podcast, but I said some words as I threw the ball, and literally the moment that ball left my hand, I was like, oh, blank. And this dude hit the ball, and I didn't even bother looking back because I knew that ball was dead center over the fence. Wow. Like it happens. Like if a guy, like it was a very bad pitch. I made a mistake on it and he capitalized it. And I'm like I'd be doing the same thing too. Like if I threw a pitch and the hitter swung and his bat went flying towards the dugout, I'd be like damn, like, you know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. like it's mm-hmm. like, yeah, you did, like, it's very hard to hit a baseball. Yeah. Like as a pitcher, literally as a pitcher, 7 out of 10 is considered good, like in your favor already. Like as if a hitter's 3 for 10 in anything else, that's terrible. But if they're 3 for 10 in baseball, then it's like, wow, he's good. So
yeah,
I mean, the odds are already against the hitter. So if they're going to be able to hit a 98 mile an hour fastball or however, and something with movement, and they hit it at 400 feet, then like, yeah, good, kudos to them. So.
Yeah, no, I agree. And like, that's why it's comical when I see these guys on social media who are like, you know, just hit the ball or stop striking out. I'm like, if any one of these guys on, you know, these Instagram or social media warriors who, you know, say, hey, stop striking out, blah, blah, blah. Put them in a box against any pitcher in the minors, and they're going 0 for 10, 0 for 100. They're not even gonna get. They're not gonna even foul tip it.
I like it. Like I understand. Like if like a guy doesn't hit, like if he hits the ball and like it's a borderline foul, like it, like you know it's gone, but you just don't know if it's fair or foul. Like I can understand just staying in the box and just seeing which direction it goes, because there's no need to jog all the way out there, then jog all the way back and get yourself tired. Like, I barely get on the mound. I barely walk in the tightest circle. I don't go all the way around because I don't want to tire myself out. But, no, I mean, obviously, too, like, obviously, if they stand there and admire it, it's kind of like, all right, like, come on, like, keep the game going. Like, we got a pitch clock and stuff like that. Like, just get going. Like if they're going to admire it, like, at least be just, like, moving while it's going. Like, that's all.
Yeah. No, for sure. And like I said, I saw that on, I was just reading that not too long ago, and I saw that on social media when I'm like, okay, that kind of brought me up when I was thinking about having you on here. Mm-hmm. Have you ever been in a fight then? Like whether it's high school, college, any ball, like ever been in like a brawl?
I've been in a few bench clearing brawls. I probably the first one I was ever in was a collegiate summer league, which happened to be involved with, I don't know if you remember it, but Cade Cavelli.
Yeah.
Prospect for the Nationals. He was in high school at the time going into his freshman year at Oklahoma, and he was playing in a summer league that allowed high school seniors that were going to play Division One college to go play in this league. And I happened to be going into my senior year of college as well. And he did something where he stole on a 3-1 count that he thought it was 3-2 when they were up 10. And it happened that one of my teammates, who was a two-way, said something to him from the dugout, and everyone's kind of upset about it. And then we end up playing the following day, and in between the two games, he told Cavalli, like, "Hey, like, watch your head." And he pointed at me. He was like, "Hey, like, he's throwing tomorrow." I'm like, "Dude, I'm not gonna hit a guy in the head, first of all." And then my the teammate that said that ended up going into the game to pitch and faced him and did not hit him. So then Cade came in to pitch, and he was still running, and like my teammate was still running his mouth. So he threw a pitch. It was a little, but it was behind the guy, but the guy ducked and it hit the back of his bat. So it looked like he was aiming for his head. So right away, just like the hitter started walking right to the pitcher, and just luckily no punches were actually really thrown. Like we got to them before like benches were really clear, but that was like the one major time. I mean, I didn't really have anything crazy in indie ball. Just like one time on like a showboat of a player hit a home run and the pitcher didn't like it, and that's about it. Like, you really didn't have any of that stuff in minor leagues until this past year. I mean, there was only one other instance last year in high A where the benches didn't really clear. They cleared because the umpires missed a call that was so bad that the fans started getting involved, and fans were getting ejected from the game, which is crazy.
I've never, I don't think I've ever seen fans get ejected from games, but I know the calls that umpires have made and continue to make and whatnot. And like, sometimes they're so egregious. Like I can see, especially in the minor leagues, you know, it's a little bit more.
Like, that's the thing too. It's like, everyone's all for the robot ump zone. Like, I think it's like, it's a hit or miss. It depends on the umpire. Like, here's the thing too. It's like, I'm one of those people that like for accountability, like if you miss a call, just say you missed a call. It just makes things worse if people are just like snobby and like don't take accountability for anything.
Yeah. And I feel like that's a lot of umpires are that way. Like if you say anything or get mad or stare them down, you're never right. They're always right, no matter what.
Yeah. And that's the thing too. If an umpire was like, "Oh, I couldn't get a position in time because of this," or it's like, "Oh, I honestly did not see it because I was looking this way," then admit that you were wrong and stuff like that. But obviously you can't overturn it. Like, we just want to know that, like, you know what you did. That's all. And then when people's prides and egos get in the way and stuff like that, that's kind of when it gets like, all right, like, now this is going to become a pissing contest and see who can piss longer. Like, come on.
Yeah. No, for sure. And like I said, we'll talk about the minors in a bit, but it's crazy out there. I do want to talk about this. Sorry, go ahead.
I literally was going to say, but umpires like that, they never get any repercussion for anything.
Right.
Like, they just call their games and just build up time over the ranks and then climb up the ranks and practice. And that's all. Like you never see an MLB umpire get sent down to AAA ever for their bad performances, which.
Yeah, that would happen.
Any umpires.
If that would happen, like, I'm shouting out Angel Hernandez right now. You know, you automatically just think Angel Hernandez when you think about bad umpires. And there's nothing, like, he just kind of laughs it off. Like, there's no repercussions. Like, he should be sent down to AAA, AA, practice his craft, and then come back up, right? There should be some sort of, like, you know, like you said, like, keep him accountable. That's all I'm asking for. A little accountability.
Exactly. Exactly.
But I want to talk to you about this. You're a Massachusetts guy, right?
I am.
All right. And I'm here in Wisconsin, but I grew up in the Bay Area. So I want to clear the air. Some may hear this and try to ruin our new friendship by talking about, you know, bad blood between the Warriors and the Celtics. We just got to clear the air now. Like, have you recovered from that? Because, like, I will say at many points during that series, I legitimately thought the Warriors were not going to win that series.
The tough part about that is, like, obviously Steph Curry, like, he's a top 10 player all time. Like, sure. You knew that going in. It hurts a little bit because, like, obviously you see this young Celtic group, like, actually finally live up to their potential and do well, but they were just too inconsistent at times. Like, Jason Tatum had some bad games when he needed to play. Like, it was just one of those things, like, after that game 2 or game 3 loss, like, it just never clicked the same. Like, I saw a story where, like, going to game 4 when, like, the whole Garden was on Draymond, like, chanting, like, F Draymond and all that stuff. Like, Steph Curry, like, literally decided, I was like, hey, I'm putting this on my back. Like, he started hitting some unbelievable shots and then started mocking the crowd to take the energy away from Draymond and put it on Steph, because Steph wasn't fazed by it, which Draymond's normally like the catalyst for that whole team, like when he's pushing the ball up the court and stuff like that. And that's where, like, once the Warriors got in their stride like that, with Draymond pushing the ball up the court and Draymond just like ends up passing, just doing all the dirty work, like that's when they're really good. Like, people don't realize that the Warriors didn't have James Wiseman, the number two overall pick.
Yeah.
Yeah, granted, like, if every team was healthy, I still think the Warriors would have won. It all comes down to how consistent they can be. Like, the Warriors had the experience. Like, that's just, you just can't beat that. Then that comes with time. Like, yeah, it helped that they had Durant, but still, like, the fact that they won a championship before Durant, one with him and one another one without him, goes to show like how special that group is.
Yeah, you mentioned Wiseman. You even talk about Kuminga, who's a rookie, Moses Moody, who's a rookie, and then who's the one who just went off? Jordan Poole, who just like absolutely just became like elite at times, which
the third Splash Brother, which is what you need, because you know they're going to get attention to Steph and Clay.
Yeah,
so it's like you don't have that scorer in Durant anymore. I mean, you had Andrew Wiggins, who stepped up finally to his potential. Like, he had all this hype of being an all-star, and he finally proved his worth this year.
Yeah. No, for sure. And not to get sidetracked, I just wanted to clear the air because, you know, people are going to listen. I said they're going to try to ruin our new friendship, talk about, you know, you're a Celtics fan and I'm a Warriors fan. So I had to clear the air there. Let's talk about your baseball career. Like, when did you start playing ball? Mm-hmm. How did that how did that all come about?
Yeah, so pretty much it started like I didn't play t-ball until like I was 3 years old. My mother at the time was a stay-at-home mom, while my dad worked all the time. And my mom played softball growing up, all through high school. And then like my grandfather was a baseball player himself. And my mom would just like, I would go to my mom's softball games with her during the summertime when I was a kid. And then like I would just like live on a dead end street, so I would just play baseball with the neighborhood kids all the time. And it just happened that I had a strong arm. Like I could throw, like I was always throwing the ball far and stuff like that. And I just fell in love playing with the game. Like I didn't become a pitcher until my senior year of high school. Really. Like I pitched when I was younger, just to like, he's got a strong arm and he can be accurate. Like that's about it. Like I was always playing like either shortstop or center field.
When did you say you started pitching?
My senior year of high school.
That's incredible. And then you went to college as a pitcher, obviously at Curry.
Yeah.
Was the recruiting process?
So this is the funny story about that. So my junior year, February of 2013, I was playing pickup basketball at a YMCA, like right next to my house. And I went for a rebound, jumped up, and I came down and landed on someone's ankle. So I proceeded to snap my growth plate, my ankle, like, I got plates and screws in it, nerve damage, stuff like that. So it caused me to miss my whole junior year of high school. So going to my senior year, I really wasn't being recruited and stuff like that. And like, I couldn't play baseball really until like mid-June. And the only thing I could really do was pitch, because I still had a limp when I was running and stuff like that. So, and I ended up doing like a fall showcase out of New England when I was in like Fitchburg, Massachusetts or something like that. And I did that, and I did like hitting, defense, everything. And then at the end, they're like, hey, is anybody else like throw? And I was like, yeah, I'll throw. Screw it. Like, why not? I mean, I threw BP the whole entire season for my high school team in a full leg cast on one leg.
Oh, wow.
And I missed playing. Yeah, just because I missed playing. So I proceeded to throw, and I didn't know how fast I was going to throw. Like, I was just hoping that I'd hit 80. No, just because at that time I wasn't around any showcases growing up and stuff like that. So well and behold, like without any really lifting and working out, I was already throwing like 80 miles an hour. So I was like, oh my goodness, like that's awesome. And then a couple days later, I found out I made the team as a pitcher. So like I told the coaches, like, hey, listen, like I don't pitch, like I hit, but I just don't pitch like that often. And they're like, no, like you're gonna want to get pitching lessons to see what happens. And like literally from like that fall to the spring, I jumped 5 miles an hour. So I was like 83, 80, 45 by the time going to my senior year. So my high school coach I told him that I was looking at a few schools, and Curry College ended up being one of them because my dad went there and he played hockey there, not baseball. So my high school coach, when I told him I was looking at Curry College, he goes, oh, my Legion coach back in the day is now the head coach there at Curry. Like I can put in a good word. Mm-hmm. So he reached out and we set up an official visit trip, and I went there toward the school, And I was like, well, can you guys watch me come play? And they're like, well, we can't really watch you play because that interrupts our fall schedule. Can you come throw a bullpen for our AAU team just for like moving forward in the spring? Because I know you're saying you're trying to play AAU. So I end up throwing a bullpen, which I didn't tell them on 2 days rest. And I was 84, 85 as well. And the pitching coach and I got along really well. And to this day, it's like one of my closest mentors. Like I still talk to him on the phone all the time. Like I go back to the school and visit a decent amount as well. Like I took an off day in spring training, drove 2.5 hours to go watch them play a doubleheader just because they were the only school that really took a chance on me. And it kind of blossomed my career. Like I ended up playing AAU for him like that summer going into my freshman year and just ran with it. Like did really well, stuff like that. Came into college as a freshman and end up getting a starting spot for conference weekend games. And we ended up winning the championship my freshman year, and I was the winning pitcher.
Wow, that's incredible. And this is your first year at Curry?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, wow. How was the celebration then, obviously? I mean, that's unless you're just, you know.
Yeah, so what happened was, so we were 9-whatever the year before going in, like the year before I was there, and we ended up, making the playoffs as a 3-seed. We ended up winning every game outright to go to the championship, so we had to get beat twice. So we lost the first game, and I ended up throwing 6 innings on a day rest after I threw 110 pitches. So I went 6 innings and threw 70 pitches after that. And I only allowed, I think, one run that whole postseason run through like 15, 16 innings. So, and like, that was a really cool moment because it showed like, hey, like I could actually compete here and do well. And then we went to regionals and I threw a complete game shutout versus the number 2 team in the region, which was really cool. So like now that opened a lot of doors to like, okay, like maybe the NECBL, maybe the Cape Cod League, maybe. So I ended up playing in the Futures League for 3 years there and just developed my stuff, faced Division I talent and did well when I was there, which is really cool.
Yeah. So you pitched off 2 days of rest, didn't allow very many runs in the whole postseason and end up being the winning pitcher. We're going to go ahead and start the narrative that you're just a dog on the mound. Like he's got to start that narrative, get it going. I mean, I'm sure it's already out there, but he's got to fan the flames.
I mean, I like to compete. I mean, I'm a very competitive person. Like I used to be very emotional when I pitched, but obviously now it's like, hey, like getting too emotional sometimes can ruin it. So it's like, it's good to kind of just keep that even keel, like kind of like a robot face, but have that fire like burning inside of you. Like, that's kind of one of the, you're going to have like that inner flame to compete. Like if you don't have the fire to compete, then what are you doing playing sports at this point? Like, and especially too, like I, when I graduated college, like obviously I went undrafted and stuff like that. I actually quit baseball. Like, cause my arm was so banged up. I had a severe case of tendonitis called tendinosis in my elbow. So like, I couldn't even bend my arm straight. I can do like regular activities, like write stuff, hold, like even like holding my phone up right now, I wouldn't have been able to do because I would get sharp pain. I couldn't turn a doorknob, carry groceries, type, like it would just like would hurt severely. And so like at that time too, like the Boston Red Sox were making their 2018 World Series run. And like, I just graduated college trying to figure out like who I am outside of sports, like what my identity is as a person, just stuff like that. And I was actually working sales for a company out of Boston for 6 months and I was absolutely miserable. Like wasn't working out, or like not that like I was working out in general, but like I wasn't being as active as I used to be and stuff like that. So I started to put on some weight. So rolling into the 2019 year, I decided like, okay, like for a New Year's resolution, what if I actually took care of my body, started lifting, started working out? And like fast forward 3 years later now, I went from independent ball, graduating college at 170 to now sitting 205, 208, like playing in double A, getting a triple A start for an affiliate team. Like it's crazy to think about.
Yeah, that's crazy. And like, what if you would have told yourself then, like working sales and retail, that, you know, just a couple years later, you'll be, like you said, making spot starts in triple A and then pitching in double A, you know, hanging out with Max Scherzer, you know, just some of the guys on that team that, and obviously he's not on the team, but you know what I'm saying? Like, just like, would you even believe yourself if you were to go back and tell yourself that?
I mean, there was always like a dream of mine to do something like that. Like, obviously I envisioned like you got to have some kind of ambition, like in self-visualization, like, hey, this is going to happen. But like in reality, like if I was being like actual, like serious, and if like when it comes down to it, no, I probably didn't think so. Like I never realized like how important it was. Like, yes, you have to do on the field stuff, but the off the field stuff was just as important. The sleep, the recovery, the diets, everything. But no, I mean, I'm glad I took that chance again, because like I honestly, like I was actually battling depression back and forth, just like trying to figure out like who I am as a person. I didn't know what to do. Like, I was going through a rough spot, and luckily my parents were like, they even said it, like, they're like, Dave, like, you look so miserable, like, go do it. So I ended up quitting my job where I was making $60,000 a year to go make about $2,000 playing indie ball. Like I took a $58,000 pay cut just to do something I love.
Right. But in the end, like, it's because you love it. Right. I mean,
yeah, exactly. Like, I'm a much happier person. Like, the relationships that I've built and the knowledge that I've learned, like, throughout these, especially like these last 3 years, just been crazy. Just like, I'm very thankful that I was able to do that and like take that risk, where normally I'm one of those people, like, I'm very cautious about that. Like, I'm like, I like change, but at the same time, it's like, I just don't dive into something.
And that's fair. And there's a lot of people who are like that. And, you know, it's not easy. And like you mentioned, finding your identity, like after sports. And I find just kind of like through interactions and like, you know, with more than baseball, like there's so many mm-hmm. guys who have played baseball in minors and then they leave sports and they think, you know, now who am I? You know, like, sports has been my life. Baseball has been my life since T-ball and travel ball and summer league and all that stuff. Now I'm out of baseball, or, you know, whatever it is, and they don't know, you know, they have that identity crisis of like, you know, now what, who am I, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. And that's the one thing too, like, I always realized, like, I loved coaching and stuff like that, because like even in college I would help run like our like fundraising clinics for like Little League and all that stuff. So it was once like I always caught myself like going back to baseball facilities and just explaining the knowledge I had and what I learned. And especially now too, like, I'm from an area in Massachusetts where there's more professional hockey players, and there's like actual like professional baseball players. And like, I mean, I'm from an area right in between Boston and Cape Cod. So there's like not too many like professional baseball players with that pedigree that still like want to help coach and stuff like that. So it's like, I always like enjoyed giving back and showing like, hey, like, you don't have to spend all this money by going to private schools or doing whatever. Like, at the end of it, it comes down to connections and like how well you want to put the work in.
No, absolutely.
So,
yeah, for sure. Your college team, how good was the football team there? I always like asking this question, like how were the college game days? Did your coach make you guys run practices in the morning to keep you guys from going too crazy the night before and whatnot?
I mean, we were so busy in the fall. Like, we'd practice Saturday and Sunday mornings. I mean, we actually, I don't even think we practiced, because like our complex was like our football field was right next to our baseball field. I mean, it was a small Division III campus, so it was like you got to early practice and get the hell out of there. So traffic. But no, I mean, the football team, I mean, they struggled my first 3 years, but they were good my senior year. But no, I mean, they had a rich history of winning way back in the day. Like, a bunch of former NFL pros were coaching the program back in the day, but. No, I mean, it was like one of the few things to do on campus. So yeah, we'd go to the tailgate from time to time. We wouldn't stay long because we'd get hungry and want to get food because we were tired from baseball. But
yeah, I can't remember who I was talking to very recently. He was he went to school in a dry county. And he said he went 1 year there and he left. He went back to JUCO after that, and he said the guys would have to drive about 2 or 3 hours away, stock up for a couple weeks. And then come back, and like he's like I had no idea what I was getting into, and I didn't even know those existed. Still, if I'm being completely honest, like, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, that sounds absolutely miserable. I'm gonna be completely honest.
Yeah. So he said anyone who would have saw them leaving like Costco or wherever they would thought they would have like an alcohol problem just with the amount of just beverages they would have to leave with, because they would stock up for like weeks at a time, because like I said, it was dry county. They couldn't purchase anything anywhere in the county.
damn.
But hey, so how did you get into with the Mets? I mean, obviously you were grinding in any ball. The Mets picked you up there. Like, what was that process all about, and how did that come through?
Yeah, so I went back to Gary, South Shore Railcats, and the American Association after my 19th season. So 2021 post COVID, I ended up going back there again, and I was there as a starter, and I was throwing the ball well. Early, like, so it's actually funny how this went down. Like a day or two before, my manager and I had gotten into an argument about something that was done with the field. Like, I didn't like how something was done, and like I like voiced my concern because like I didn't want anyone to get hurt, because like I saw something happen to one of the pitches the night before on our team, and I was like, hey, like, can we not do this time? And I got chewed out, and I was like, listen, I didn't know that, like, I was frowned upon for me to ask like that, like. And so he was chewing me out, and then we had an off day, and which it's like the off day, so we're getting ready to go to Kansas City, and like the bus was leaving like 11:30 at night or like midnight, so we're just going to drive through the night. And I'm getting ready to like pack up. I'm in the locker room, and my pitching coach, I'm in the trainer's room helping pack, and my pitching coach goes, hey, Griff, wants to see you in his office. So I'm like, oh God, like right on a trip too, like this is not good. So I walk in, and Skip tells me to sit down. I'm like, oh boy. And he was like, David, like obviously you just threw the other day, like, and you're only on the road for 3 days, like you're probably not going to throw, so we're not going to bring a road trip. I'm like, okay, like that sounds reasonable. And he starts talking about like the past when he first met me, and like how much like I've matured and stuff like that as a player, and like learned. And I'm like, where is he going with this? So he goes, yeah, we're going to get you ready for your start Saturday. However, it's not going to be for us. And I'm like, oh, great. Like I just got traded or whatever. And he goes, just about 10 minutes ago, I got off the phone with the New York Mets. They bought your contract. And I'm like, huh? And he goes, yeah. He goes, honestly, Dave, I got to tell you, it was ironic because they were the only team in person that hadn't watched you pitch out here. And I'm like, really? And like, that's what he told me. So then he gave me the contact number of somebody to get in touch with, and like where I was going to be going and things like that. So I actually walk out of the locker room, like faces blank. Like everybody thought I got traded or released. So like one of my locker mates next to me, who I happened to like, we got there at the same time for like 2 years. So he's like, you're not traveling? I go, no, I'm out. And he goes, oh, like you're not coming on the road trip? I go, no, like I'm out. And he goes, what, you get released? I'm like, no. He goes, you get traded? I go, no. And he goes like, wait, so what happened? I go, I got picked up. And he's like, wait, by who? And I was like, the New York Mets. And then everyone just like erupted in the locker room. And someone's like, you literally walked by me as if like your dog died. And I was just like, dude, I was just trying to process it all. So that was a cool experience. So I actually, and this was like 11:30 at night Central Time. So I had to go call my parents, obviously, for his phone call. Like, so I'm going to call my dad. My dad's always on his phone, which that late though, he's normally asleep. So I call him, no answer. I'm like, all right, whatever. So then I call my mom, who's, it's a 50-50 shot whether she even knows where her phone is. Love her to death, but it's a flip of the coin. And she picks up first ring, and she goes, hey, what's wrong? And I was like, oh, now you pick up. Like, and I was just like, oh, like, can you wake up dad? And she was like, is everything okay? I go, just wake up dad and put me on speakerphone. So they're like, okay. And they said, hey, what's up? And I said, I just wanted to let you guys know that I'm not traveling to Kansas City this week because I just found out that the New York Mets had signed me and bought my contract. Now I'm pitching Saturday in Delaware for the High 18 Brooklyn Cyclones. And they were like, oh my God, like that's awesome. Like they were still half asleep. So they're like, that's awesome. Like, good for you. Like, of course, the motherly instinct. So like, you're not driving tonight, are you? I'm like, no, I got to pack up and everything. So I like got off the phone with them. Like I was texting like my best friends, like from college, my roommates from like, my roommates from college, my best friends from home, telling like all that news. And like, word's starting to spread. So my parents call me back like 30 minutes later, like just in pure excitement, hoorah, like, oh my God, like you got signed. Like, oh, it was so funny. So, but no, it's been a wild journey. Like, obviously, like not trying to be too hard on myself at times, but just enjoying it all. It's like I was lucky enough to get a second chance back into baseball, and not many people are able to do that. So, like, but like one of the guys, it was cool. He was actually one of your former guests on your podcast, Jared Koenig.
Oh yes, yes, I love Jared. Yeah, so shout out to him.
So him and I actually were in the same indie ball camp for Lake Erie. in 2019. Unfortunately, the Lake Erie is the first team that signed me, but I got released because I didn't make the roster, which that's how I ended up in Gary, which is ironic enough. But like Jared and I still stay in touch and follow each other's careers and stuff like that. So like obviously watching him get called up to the show was an unbelievable feeling, because like he was just one of those guys that no matter where he went, all he was doing was just throwing strikes and getting guys out. And like it just shows that like it doesn't matter when you start. It's just whether you want to give up or not.
No, like, Jared is. He's such a great guy. Like he's one of those guys that you just want. You can't root against him, right?
I texted him and like he got back to me so quick, and I was like, oh my goodness! Like I didn't think. I go, dude, your phone's probably like off the hook right now.
Same thing with me. Like I DM'd him a couple times, like pretty quick. Like, hey, thanks for the response, or thanks for the encouraging words. I appreciate you. And I'm like you are just, you know, like you said, his phone's blowing up. Like, I don't even understand like how he has the time to respond to everybody. But I imagine he probably responded to everybody, or at least acknowledged like their message. And like me and him have messaged back and forth since then, you know. I'm waiting for him to come out here, hopefully. And I told him, I said, hey, if you're still with the team, hopefully, you know, knock on wood, he is. When they come down to Minnesota, Chicago, he out here in the Midwest, like I'm down there. Like I can't wait to see him and pitch in person and all that. It's absolutely just electric what he's been able to do.
Oh, for sure. It's been awesome to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. So. And like, it's funny that you mentioned him, because talking to you, your story kind of reminded me of his, you know, going to indie ball and now signed to affiliate ball, and then it would make his all the way to Triple A, and then obviously his major league debut this season. Let's talk about the minors, because like this is one of the funny things. It's funny because you're pro players and you go through things you shouldn't have to go through. So like I say, it's funny, but it's really not funny. I like talking about these experiences that you go through, and I say this all the time. Fans, they see the final product. They see the Jared Koenig making his major league debut. They don't see the years of indie ball, minor league ball, all the grind, the whole, you just got off a 4 or 5 hour bus ride yourself, and you know, you only found one place to eat, whatnot. So like, it's just those stories that I like to hear kind of highlight. Do you have any interesting, like maybe experiences, either bus rides or like hotels, where you think back, you're like, why am I even going through this experience right now?
I mean, definitely when I was playing indie ball, for sure. Like, it was like my first year on the road, like not knowing what to expect, being away from home. Like that was definitely something, like it made you question a lot of stuff, because especially like in indie ball too, it's kind of like the Wild West, like depending on where you're playing and who you're playing with. Like we'd have three guys in a hotel room like this. We'd have like maybe one sharing a bed or one sleeping on the floor. And it's like, if you're considered a professional sports team, like everybody should have their own bed at least. But no, I mean, we've seen I've been a part of like the 14-hour bus rides. Like I've been crossing the country through Canada and stuff like that. Like all the horror stories that I heard about affiliate, like by the time I got there, like they were already kind of somewhat like rectified. Like when I was in low A, like the Mets, like, everything was maybe a 2 hour bus ride, not even like where we went. And then the series just became a week long thing. So it's like, you never really have to travel that much. It was just, you're in the same place for a week and then go. But I mean, food wise, sometimes you're going to get food that you might not like that others do. It's like, not every meal is going to be catered to your exact needs. Like I understand that. And that's just like, and if we don't like it, then it's like, we can go find something on our own. Like they now pay for our housing. They give us meal money on the road and stuff like that. It's just whether how we want to spend our money. Like we can't be going to buy all these clothes or going out to like buy like all these drinks and stuff like that. It's like, no, like if you're trying to save your money, like you're saving your money on food. Then like, you're not going to be drinking. Like you're not going to be whatever. You make sure you get your sleep and get your nutrition you need.
Yeah, for sure. No, absolutely. That's well said. And like, I'm glad like the whole minor league housing, obviously there's still some issues. I've talked to guys who have married or, dating or whatnot, and it's kind of, there's little things here and there they can fix and improve, but just to go from where it was to where it is now, it's just a huge leap.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's definitely a big step.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Have you ever in either indie ball or you know, the minors or whatnot, have you ever gone like getting off the bus, you go to a city and just look around, like, where am I? I'm in the middle of nothing but like cornfields and like Iowa or something.
Yeah, I mean, definitely in the American Association, like there was a few places out there, like I mean, we'd be in the middle of like Sioux City, Iowa. Like, there are some places that I never thought in my life that I would ever be in. Like, I was in Fargo, North Dakota, Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and stuff like that. Like I'm by no means I'm like dissing on any of the states.
Absolutely.
It's just like,
for sure.
It's funny because like I've always like I forget like when I started this baseball like journey in general, like I forget who I was talking to the other day. It's like I've been to over 30 states out of the 50 states in all for baseball, which is crazy to think about. And like the only place I haven't really been to play baseball is the West Coast. Like literally from like the middle of the country and east, I've played in all except for like Missouri or West Virginia, and that's it.
Did you play in Wisconsin?
I did. Oh, I played Milkman? Against Milwaukee Milkmen.
That's yeah, mm-hmm. I was gonna say Milkmen because that would have been Indy ball because you're low A and high A and double A, they wouldn't match with ours in here, whatnot. But couple of things before we go. This question I love asking. Have you had any like interesting or funny fan interactions? I've had guys tell me fans asking them to sign their foreheads, or one player had a fan like make a replica out of like 10 cans and whatnot of him with like the little baseball cap with you put the ice cream scoops as his head painted a picture of him. Like some weird Jared Koenig actually had one too. I can't remember exactly off the top of my head what his was, but have you had any interesting fan interactions?
I mean, I've had some fans that, because there's really no baseball cards of me up until this year. Like, Binghamton just released like their team set, and like, I was there long enough to have my own picture finally. Like, other than that, like, no other team that there's, I'm not in any, I have no baseball cards or anything like that. So, like, collectors were always trying to find like my card. And so I came across a few fans where they've taken pictures from either my social media and stuff like that, because like I know which pictures like I post and which ones like are out there and which ones aren't. And a fan took some of my pictures from my social media and put them on baseball cards, and it was like that wasn't strange. Like, obviously it's cool to see yourself on a baseball card and stuff like that.
So they homemade your own baseball card. Okay.
Yeah, and like I wasn't expecting that, and it's like I like obviously too like the like I've been around like a lot of top prospects, like between Alvarez, Beatty, Mauricio. Like I've been with them majority of the time in my Mets tenure. So like as I'm walking around, like I see them like people just like hunting those guys down, and like I've seen some stuff. Like I've seen like what fans do for them. So it's like I don't have any crazy stories like that. So
what's the craziest thing you've seen a fan do to try to get one of those guys like attention or to get an autograph? Obviously, because you see the guys with like, the binders and just flipping through them with like 50 cards.
Well, I it happened this year. Like I saw a bunch of kids try to pop up on our bus, like come in on our bus, and like like a dad took his hand and like took a photo of us on the bus inside the bus.
So he stuck his phone in the window.
Yeah.
Jeez.
No, like through like the walkway.
And, oh, okay.
Like, up, like they were in the bus. Like it was like we didn't even realize it was going on until it was too late. But no, I mean that was probably the toughest one. Like. It was one of those games where we lost by a decent amount. We just didn't play good. So, like, obviously people are frustrated. So, like, the last thing we want to try to do is, like, yeah, we'll sign stuff for the kids and stuff like that. But we're not going to, like, because obviously, too, like, you want to keep the dream alive for kids. Like, you want to give them a reason to keep playing and stuff like that. So, it's, like, yeah, like, I'm not going to sign, like, we don't want to just sign baseballs to your collection. Like, if we have time, then, yeah, we'll do so. But it's like if we see either a little kid's baseball to sign or like an older person, like we're probably gonna pick the kids because the kids are ultimately the future of our sport.
Yeah,
whether they know it or not, and the best we can do is try to make the impression memorable for them to keep going.
Yeah. So well said. This guy who goes on the bus, like how fast were there people kicking him off? Like was security there?
No, we didn't even see them. Like all we saw was a little phone go up and then go.
Oh, so he took a picture and just happened? Dipped out.
Yeah. And we're just like, what just happened?
What? That's crazy. Yeah. Fans are crazy here.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like, come on, man. Like if you really want to get our stuff, like go to the game earlier, sure. Go to the ballpark earlier. It's like if we're in a good mood, then yeah, like that's the risk of you're willing to take. Like if you get to the ballpark later, then it's like, yeah, you better hope we play well then. Because like, obviously, if we play well and win, we're going to want to be signing some stuff more. But yeah. You just happened to be one of those days where we didn't play well.
Yeah, and they got to read the room. Like, I've seen, like, after losses, like, you know, like here below, I live about 40 minutes from Beloit, which is now the Marlins high A team. And I know a couple guys on there, so, like, I'll go there, get some tickets and stuff. And I see fans after the game, like, asking to sign autographs when they lose, and they just look at them like, you know, like, this is not the time to, like, you know, like, you got to read the room a little bit.
I mean, I understand, like, it's like a little kids. Like, yeah, there's, like, some kids, like, it's harder to say no to little kids than it is to adults. Like, if a little kid, like, wants a baseball and stuff like that, then, like, yeah, like, or, like, I mean, stuff when they ask for baseballs. Like, if they have a baseball and a pen there, like, then, yeah, we'll sign them all day. Like, sign a few. Like, I remember, like, especially, too, like, for, like, me, like, when I was closer to home, like, when I was playing in, like, Hartford or when I was playing in the Manchester, New Hampshire, like, I was trying to sign all those autographs for those kids just because, like, I'm from that area. So, like, I can actually engage them, be like, oh, hey, where are you from? Then all I can tell them, oh, like, I trained down the street here. And or like, oh, like, I'm from the area. So now they're like, wait, he's from around here? And, like, it kind of gives them, like, a little bit of, like, excitement as well.
Yeah, man of the people. Man of the people.
Yeah, I mean, I've been in those shoes once. Like a crazy part was, too, like, when I was in AAA this past weekend, like, Derek Holland pitched for them. He was in the big leagues for a while. And it was funny because I, like, one of my very first pictures on my, like, photo album on my phone, like, I have a picture with Derek Holland. He was with Texas.
Yeah, back in the day with the Rangers. Like,
yeah, so I was, like, a freshman, sophomore in high school. And then who would have thought 10 years later playing against him in AAA game? Like it's just crazy to see, like, where life takes you at that point.
Yeah. Over 100 or over under 100, like, how many times do you hear per game, hey, can I get a ball? Like, that has to wear on you, though. Like, hey, can I get a ball? Hey, can I get a ball?
It depends where you are, for sure. Like, if the dugout's close to the fans, then you hear it a lot. Like, and that's one of the lessons you learn. Like, if you're a pitcher and you're not pitching that game, do not wear your jersey, because if you wear your jersey in the number, like, people are just going to pepper you for stuff. Hey, 23, because, like, if they know your name, they're going to know your name. And if they don't know your name, they're just going to say, hey, 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 and you tune that out a lot easier. But no, I mean, people just expected, like, the big leagues that we can throw away stuff nonstop. Like, it costs a lot. It costs money to, like, keep getting those baseballs and stuff like that. Like,
yeah, y'all get, like, one or two gloves unless you have, like, some, you know, like a sponsorship or whatnot. But, like, so many minor leagues have, like, one or two per season.
Oh yeah, I gotta buy my glove. Mine from this year is already ripping, so I actually gotta start glove shopping quick, or I'm just gonna have to reinforce everything and just get it out for the last 2 months.
Yeah. And it's crazy, like I said, what the minor leaguers go through. Because, I mean, like, again, like, I had Simon, who he's been since released from the Rays, but he one of the founders of More Than Baseball. And he said, you know, we just kind of laugh, like, all these people asking, hey, can I have your baseball or can I have your bat or can I have your glove? He's like, no, if I don't have this glove, like, I had to buy my own glove. I don't just get all these. This is not the majors, you know what I'm saying? So it's crazy. Yeah. And sometimes the fans don't see that whole side of things, you know?
Yeah, and it's like, too, they're like, oh, like, because I remember somebody asked me, like, oh, can I give you a hat? I almost was like, you got $40? Because I still got the price tag on here, and it says 40. So, but no, they asked, can I get you a hat? They're like, you can, like, all our hats, you can go to Lids and buy it. So it's like, do you want the hat just because I wore it? Like, that's a different story. Like,
that's funny. Last thing I want to ask you before we get off here, craziest thing you've seen in the bullpen. I had Tyler Mitzel with the Marlins, and, like, he said, one of the pitchers on his team would drown himself by getting a cup of water and, like literally putting his nose and breathing in, and then he would spit out the water, and it would give him, like, a rush of, like, adrenaline, and he would go out there and pitch. And I'm like, are you serious? And I mean, you know, obviously smelling sauce, whatever you people use, but drowning himself, that's never heard someone say that before. But he says now everyone in their bullpen does it.
Damn, I gotta think about this. You put me on the spot for this one. So I feel like I've definitely seen a few stuff. Like, I've seen summer ball days where, like if a guy is not pitching, he's smoking a cigarette, playing a banjo, and, like, that's just summer ball.
Yeah.
Like, but for, like, professionally, I don't know. Like one entertaining thing I've seen us do is like there was, like, a kind of like a railing that's, like, elevated where people can, like a walkway, people can, like, fans can walk by and they can overlook into our bullpen. And I've seen guys put three levels of cups out, like one's closest, one's the middle, one's furthest. So I like the cuff closest was, if you get it in, it's like you get some, like, get some gum. If you get the furthest away, if you get like the middle one, it gets like this cup is like if you get it in from there, it's like you get like use batting gloves and a bat. So what we did was we filled a little bit of cups to like a little bit of water, and we had a pill jar filled with quarters. So we'd ask the fans, like, hey, like, how many throws do you want? They're like, oh, give us $5. So we throw up them, we throw up the quarters, then they would put the $5 in the thing and throw it back down to us, the pill thing. So we had $5 right there, and they would shoot quarters. So if they missed, they kept going. So like within the first five innings, we put up $60
for our bullpen. That's crazy. That's awesome. And you get like the bullpens, the conversations there are like just electric, just kind of overhearing like the conversations as a fan. And, you know,
the bullpen's a safe zone.
Yeah.
A safe zone.
Absolutely. For sure. Well, hey, I want to thank you for coming on. Obviously, like I said, you just had a long bus drive. Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay.
You cut out for a second, but
okay.
I got you.
Okay, right on. I just want to thank you for coming on. Obviously, like I said, you just got off a long bus ride. You know, I'm glad we were able to, you know, get this all hooked up and all that. But I do want to thank you for coming on. Appreciate that. We're gonna have to have you back on. We're looking forward. I'm a big David guy now. Like, I'm gonna look forward to see what you get doing, you know, with the Mets. Hopefully this season, you know, make that next step. Hopefully, you know, get that major league promotion. Either way, you keep grinding, and I'll keep watching what you're doing, man.
Hey, thanks for having me. Glad to be on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, brother. You have a great rest of your night, man.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. 2 420-foot vertical speedways, 3 launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.